What's up, everybody? It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 5-9 of the Fan. JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar. Come live from Lockdown, Ontario. Lockdown, lockdown, lockdown yet again. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. What fun times. What fun, sexy times. It's freezing cold outside. Go outside. Yeah, just, you know, go outside. You can go to a patio right now. That's what we're all going to do. How's it going?
Go for your little walks. Go for your little mental health walks.
Yeah.
Bundle up. Put a scarf, hat, toque, warmers on. Mitt warmers, toe warmers.
Yeah.
Double park it up.
Double parka. Double parka. Double. Double parka.
So, well, yeah, I'm back in the Big Smoke, which is a lot warmer than the Big, Big Smoke, Sudbury.
Oh, the Big, Big Smoke. The Bigger Smoke, as they call it there. Yeah, how's your drive?
Honestly, frightening. And I checked the radar. I checked the weather. I did all of the things that I needed to do before I left. And it was supposed to be clear and sunny, and I got on Highway 69 and it was white knuckle driving to the point where you know when you get so nervous, like scared, you have to turn the music down? Like I turned the volume off. I was sitting there like, okay, this could be it. And I was like, you're almost debating, do I pull over and drive through this? But then you're like, someone's going to rear end me because they can't see. There's like, there's no other lanes. So I trucked it out. I was behind this giant trucker and I'm just like in his shadow. Like, I can see this one giant truck I'm going to follow. So for probably like, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes, it was really dodgy. I was like, I'm not going to be on the show tomorrow, you guys.
No, you made it. You made
it. Send in Justin Cuthbert, but we made it. We're all good.
Back
in my little quiet apartment in lockdown now. So.
Tough drive to make with Bandit on your lap for 5 hours, too.
And my poor cat was sitting there like, what's all this snow? What are you doing? I'm like, I know, shut up.
Your cat has no concept of snow, if that makes you feel better.
That is, as much as I love my family, I think everybody can relate to this, truly. Everyone can relate to... If you spend time with your family more than just a day or two, right? Because a day or two, even a weekend, never really feels like enough. But my whole life, I've been tinkering with the formula of how long is the right amount of time to be at home? How many days is the right amount of days to be with your family? And over the Christmas break, it's like once you start to get into a week, which you were into.
I hit 10 days.
That's what I'm saying. Once you're into that phase, you're just back being a roommate of that home. Like there's no – you're no longer a guest. You're no longer a cherished person. You're just there to do chores. Like you're reverting back to your old habits. You got to get out. And getting home and having that journey done when you live far away from home – this excludes anybody from Toronto who has their family all
in Toronto.
Parents
are like Markham, okay?
Yeah, I'm like, no, you don't count. I'm sorry, you're out of here. This is only for people that their parents are, I'm going to say, 3.5 hours drive away minimum. You got to be out and you got to be like Kingston far away for this to count or apply to you. That getting home feeling after the holidays is one of the top feelings ever. You know, I got a routine now. I got make sure your sheets, you come home to brand spanking clean sheets. That is a clutch move. Not having too many chores for when you get home. Being able to just kind of get in your bed and eat some of the whatever baked slash
the amount of leftovers I brought
home. Yes. The leftovers in your house. The leftovers in your apartment. Getting into your bed that first night. Elite feeling. Elite. All-time feeling.
Yeah, and my parents were like, do you want to stay a little longer? I'm like,
yeah, of course they did. No.
Truly need to get back into my space. I'm like, the connection. You know, Rogers was saying the connection up in Sudbury wasn't great. Got to get back down to Toronto.
You know, your brother listens to the show.
Yeah, I know my brother's listening right now, but he's actually heading back up there because he wants to go ice fishing. It's just like never ending.
Smart. I just told still have some company. Before we came on the show that I knew I was washed up from feeling really sore, like unbelievably sore after a day of ice fishing over the holidays. So kudos to your brother who, you know, obviously has a good auger and who is much younger and in probably much better shape than I am.
He's got a cushy ice fishing setup, like one of those like designer fish huts with, it's like a little condo.
Yeah,
okay. Like a doorman.
I know those guys, yeah. Yeah, he's probably got like really expensive sonar and he's just one of those guys. Yeah, it's okay.
He task rabbits someone to dig the hole.
That's
yeah,
right.
No, he does. Yeah, no, I get it. He's Jordy. Like, that's just Jordy. So, in less positive news, the opposite. So, the good feeling of getting home and
quickly
being
diminished.
In your own bed. Yeah, being in your own bed and having that food in your apartment and kind of getting back in your routine, countered by the reality that that's where you'll be. That you got the Homer Simpson, don't forget, you're here forever treatment as soon as you got back into your condo. So we're locked down for at least 3 weeks again. And I don't know. I do want to – I always want to be a place where people can kind of reach out if they ever feel like the need to communicate something, or even be a place where people can voice frustrations. And I've always thought that a talk radio show or sports radio show, when it's at its very best, is still hitting on things that matter to the community. But I don't want to really be the show that is constantly going over this and griping. I think at this point, everybody feels pretty similarly, which is frustrated, which is broken in a lot of ways, which is just there are so many people that have been stretched so thin with this thing. And it's different when it was early in the pandemic and we were all sort of banding together and there seemed to be light at the end of the tunnel with vaccines. And to have it come full circle like this, where the vaccines weren't what they thought they were going to be for us, where we're back into lockdowns, where we're back into talking about our healthcare system this way, where we're mad at politicians, where we're fighting with each other, it just sucks. It just really sucks. All I will say is one of the groups that I think largely gets overlooked in all of this is athletes and kids, because we talk a lot about pro sports on this show, and yeah, duh, it's a pro sports show. We focus on arenas and the lifelessness that there is with the Toronto Maple Leafs. But all I could think of this, like, late last night as we're prepping for the show and we're talking about lockdowns and how harmful they can be, because honestly, like, that's my one position, is I'm very anti-lockdown. I just don't believe in them. I think that they are going to cause more harm than good at this point. And I feel that from just about, you know it, everyone you're talking to right now and how they feel about this lockdown. It is in stark contrast with even before, even when we did that stupid, they tried to basically make it a police state here where you couldn't go to a park outside, which was nuts. This is even worse than that. But kids and just not being able to get physical activity and the disruption yet again to sports. And I just know, like, Ailish, especially, I wanted to kind of bring you in on this too, because, like, all three of us played sports growing up. And everybody that listens to the show likely did as well. In some capacity, you had some organized sport that helped you fall in love with these games at a professional level. And the reason that that happened is because those games were so important to you as a kid. Getting out and being active and going and playing hockey and socializing with other kids. Like, I, not to be old man here, and I'll end this rant, but it is different now with kids and screens and video games and ways that kids connect. And I can't imagine being a kid now and being told, hey, your socialization is yet again just through screens. And it isn't through seeing your friends playing sports. It isn't with your hockey team, your indoor soccer team, your basketball team. It's not that anymore. It's back to the screens. And just that disruption, that scares me. And I really, really feel for kids who are largely voiceless in a lot of this, who are all losing so unbelievably much. Think about what a kid has gone through now if they're like 12 years old or finishing high school or entering university. They're just what it has been like for them the past couple of years. Awful. Just truly, truly awful. So I'm going to move off of it. But yeah, this won't just be pure COVID show. But I feel sick for everybody that loves athletics. And everybody where it means so much to your mental health right now, so much to your physical health right now, having that just robbed of you yet again.
Yeah, and at the, in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to Dr. Simon Darnell from University of Toronto. He's an associate professor of sport and development and peace, and he's, as a sports sociologist, wrote about the effects that young children are going to have and are already facing due to the pandemic. And just to give some context of, you know, numbers and what we can expect, but maybe also to hopefully give us some positivity of what we can do, what parents can do, what kids can do. And, you know, you touched on it a bit. I cannot imagine my life without sports from like the youngest age that I was in, whether that was like just leadership development, physical activity, understanding like my friendships, setting goals, like just knowing all the things that it's provided me, like my entire professional career shaped around me being an athlete. And it is really, really upsetting when I think about if I had lost those opportunities. And I've actually mentored some kids through this, some youth, whether they're, I think the 12 to 14 age is what I'm seeing is the hardest because they've had it. They know for what sure. these situations are. They know what it's like to be on a team, what it's like to go to school and play sports at, you know, elementary school or get excited to go to high school. And they're really struggling with what to do now that it's been given to them and taken away. And they given to them again, like the Michael Scott snip, snap, snip, snap meme. And it's really depressing, honestly. And a lot of them are starting to come to terms with what mental health is at a really young age and being kind of forced into that understanding instead of kind of having that time to realize that as they mature, it's like, this is what it's like to be facing these issues at a young age. And, you know, I've done some Zoom conferences over the pandemic or some Zoom, you know, lessons of like, okay, let's be active in our houses. This is what you can do. You can stick handle with a ball. You can, you know, here's how you can work out in your home. And it's at first there's like, okay, this is a kind of an exciting way to change my life. And now this is something you've been doing for 2 years. Are you really yeah. developing your skills? Are you really, how much more like mental skills can you do when you're not even playing and putting it into practice? So it's definitely so disappointing. And I feel for kids of all ages, like even my friends that are still in college, like yeah. they've been taken away from playing the sport at probably the highest level they're going to play. So yeah, I cannot state enough how important sports have been in my life. I really hope that we can find a quick way through getting kids back in activity, whether it's just like for fun, for exercise, or for, you know, their hopes and dreams in their future. But I guess that's the last I'll say on it too. But it's really tough. And I feel for parents out there too that are trying to figure out what to do with their kids and how to keep them motivated and keep them, you know, interested in sport, because a lot of people are now moving off of it.
I can't imagine what this is like to be a parent through this. Obviously, if you're a kid through this, it's really difficult. But, you know, like I'm all three of us really, but like I work from home capably. I don't have kids. I'm not an essential worker. Like I'm not in healthcare or I'm not a teacher. I have a lot of friends back home who are teachers who have kids, and talking to them and hearing them, like the short notice of everything, the lack of clarity, lack of guidance, it sucks. So if you, I don't know if you qualify as that, we feel for you. And I don't know. Fortunate that doesn't apply to me, I guess, but I do worry a lot about the mental health aspect here and the physical health aspect too. But the physical health aspect is at least something you can try to make up later. The mental health aspect, I don't really know.
I just think that they're interconnected though more than mm-hmm. we acknowledge, and that is yet another part of this.
Mm-hmm. JD, both of your parents and both of my parents were teachers, uh-huh. and I went when I was home over the break. Mine are both retired at this point. I said, what would you guys like be doing? Like, how would this affect you? And they said, first of all, they're not very tech savvy. So they're like, we probably would have been forced into retirement. Like, I don't know how to teach virtually. And then I said, what would you do with Jordan and I? Like, would you have put us in school? And I just watched them struggle with that conversation. Like, I don't really know. Like, it depends if you guys really wanted to. Depends on where you were in your hockey career. Like, was it essential for you to be going and playing hockey? Like, maybe we would risk it. Maybe we would have to put you through that because you know, maybe your opportunities for a scholarship would be diminished if you weren't at school. And I thought about all the different factors that parents have to consider and how difficult this would be. So, I totally feel you. I can't put myself in your shoes as more than just to imagine what it would be like, but just stay strong and hopefully we get through this one quickly. And Yeah, we can. If you have questions, today's Text Line Tuesday. So if you have questions that you want us to ask Dr. Simon Darnell at 9, or you want to talk about anything, today's Text Line Tuesday. So 590-590, put in your text. We'll try to keep it non-COVID related. But if you have anything you want to chat about or questions or anything, throw us a text.
Yeah, it's like Blake, I think you said that well. There's perspective is important, right? So for us, the disruption is pretty minimal, right, in all of this. End up getting to work from home. We all end up keeping our jobs. It isn't a high-stress environment. It's fine. Our biggest complaints at times have been either some technical difficulties or not having some games and sports, whatever. They're very, very minuscule in the grand scheme of things. Like, very minuscule. But with that also does come reflecting on what that means and how few people have that luxury. We have paid sick days because we are full-time employees. We have that ability. We have mental health days. We're able to take those. And I thought about all the people that are not allowed to take that right now, all the people that don't have that right now. And it makes me sick. It makes me sick that we're back in this place and that we've missed so many of these different things and that we're still arguing and fighting with each other about things like these policies about like whether it's not you're going to be your third vaccine or your fourth vaccine of this, or whether it's not enough masking, or trying to blame certain people that are in the hospitals all of a sudden. Like, it's just, it's asinine to me. It's like leadership in this province has failed people again. Factually, there were things that they could have done so much better that have put people in this position yet again, where everyone is feeling so stretched thin and worn out and broken. And yes, kids were impacted. And I do believe that, again, this is through the lens of athletics because it is an athletic show, but it is so unbelievable to me, these gym closures where they decide to say, we're going to take away places where you can be healthy because we're worried. Well, where is the evidence of all this spread that's happening at gyms? You're telling me that there's more harm coming from people working out and exercising right now than there is with filling up a hospital. Like, there's just nothing. It's asinine. Asinine, asinine, asinine. And physical health, mental health, these things matter. They matter to a lot of people. And sticking everybody inside and telling them that they have to be there and that they don't have those outlets for a minimum of 3 weeks in the middle of January, in the heart of January, is god-awful. So anyways, good luck. Everybody stay strong. And yes, I don't want to just start ramping up. And I know it's a sports show and people would just even get mad when you hear stuff about COVID on a sports show. But my God, it's really, really hard to ignore. And it's hard to just kind of remain silent on everything. That said, are we ready to pivot out of this? Because God, yeah. I'm trying. I will try my best to remain positive and focus on some of the sports and quote unquote stick to sports for a lot of you. But yeah, I feel the frustration of so many in this province, and I'm sorry to all these kids who yet again have had disruptions to their physical health, and that will impact their mental health. It's one thing for us to all tweet about it on one day of the year. It's another thing for us to actually publicly acknowledge it as we move forward into another lockdown. Austin Matthews pops positive for COVID. I don't know if there was an update on his PCR test or whatever it is that ends up happening today. I thought that we were kind of done with PCR tests. Like, I guess I don't know where we are with testing anymore. Also another thing, I was like, do they matter? Who matters? We're stretched thin. We're going to use a billion of them on, young, healthy athletes. That seems kind of stupid right now in our province, but whatever. Let's just ignore that component of it. Matthews looks like he's going to be out for his game against McDavid. The following game is against McKinnon. Losing those two games kind of sucks, even if one of them will be played in front of no fans, even if one of them, the highlight is Zach Hyman's was supposed to be returned. Do you guys care about any other matchup in hockey right now other than like the combination of those three players? Is there something that you prefer? Because losing Matthews, McDavid, Matthews, McKinnon, it's not like you're getting those 5-6 times a season.
Yeah, I think especially after we had the North Division, which was a bit of a treat in a sense. You got to see a lot more Matthews, McDavid, or just that narrative was more prevalent because they were playing each other more, and you definitely compared those teams. Like, when you're not playing them as much, it's easy. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. It's easy to be like, oh, is there really that rivalry there? But as soon as you see that on the schedule, you know that they're going to get up for that game. The Oilers have been absolutely trash as of late, and I feel like McDavid has something to prove even more so, because I think they're 2-8-2 over the last 12 games, and they're just, something's going on in Edmonton. And so when you're part of that, yeah, they're just trash. But when you're a part of that team and you're the leader and you're the guy, you're the face, like, you need to come out and put a statement game. And everybody gets up to play the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, they're one of the most prestigious franchises. You're gonna want to even more so prove that this team isn't a garbage fire. But I think now with everything going on, I don't feel that same intrigue. It's just, it's more like, is this going to happen? Oh, okay. Are they going to punt the game? Are they not? It's just, it's really tough. But yeah, that rivalry, that matchup is something that I look forward to as a fan. And I don't know, this kind of sucks again.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess this isn't really Leafs related. I mean, those are great games, but I look ahead a little bit too. And one of the notes I had queued up just to talk off of the COVID stuff is that the NBA juggled a bunch of schedule stuff yesterday, and we're potentially getting Kyle and DeMar returning in the same week, potentially with no fans. And I think it's the same. I think it's so the sad. Same kind of thing. It's just like, you lose some of the juice on these games because, I mean, first of all, this is all done for fans, right? Like, the fans are what matters. But even if you're watching from home, like, you lose a lot of juice. You lose a lot of energy. It's the same for Matthews McDavid. I know we're talking about Matthews missing these games, not just crowdless games, but it's the same kind of thing where, you know, there are days you circle on your 82, and they're no longer, I mean, they're still circled, I guess, but they're not circled as emphatically. There's no highlight on top of the circle.
Yeah, I think yesterday the Leafs were supposed to be playing the Carolina Hurricanes, and it was postponed, and we don't even look at that. It's like, it's such a strange thing right now, too, where you look at that and go, oh, that's a postponed game that I don't even know about, and yet, I guess the Oilers game is not postponed, and the rhyme or reason for some of these things is quite interesting. But yeah,
it's just money. Like, yeah, even they've admitted it.
Yeah, look at no... I'm kind of curious, too, how long Matthews is out, because maybe this is the beginning of players testing positive, being asymptomatic, and getting back more quickly, and that this is just sort of a part of all of this, like, societally as well, which is, if you're feeling well, if you're asymptomatic, you're coming back to normal life much quicker. I think about Carson Wentz, who was an unvaccinated player in the NFL. Last week, he tested positive. And everyone kind of assumed, oh man, this guy might cost his team the playoffs. He might be out for the next 2 weeks. Who knows what is going to happen with the Colts? And then he ends up just even playing in the Sunday game. And with Matthews, I wonder if this is going to be very similar, where he's sort of, we had this break in Canada, and so a lot of guys came back after long stints off. And so it seemed like, okay, everybody sort of got over this together. Matthews could sort of be the poster boy for coming back from COVID-19 very, very quickly if he's back for that Saturday night game against McKinnon. I think that'll be a big story.
Yeah, and so the NHL and NHLPA have kind of followed the NFL and in lockstep with the NBA in terms of, hey, if you meet certain conditions, that isolation period is down from 10 days to 5 days. Now, obviously, that's subject to jurisdictional stuff, but the Leafs hit the road for a while after this one, so it could be a case where, you know, yesterday won't count in the 5 days, but realistically, after that Colorado game, the Leafs have another pair of days off. So it seems like, you know, as long as Matthews stays asymptomatic, which it sounded like he is, it's a 2-game gap.
Mm-hmm. Well, would they bring him? Like, that's the thing, is if they're on the road for X amount of games, he can't travel with the team. Do they just wait till he's negative, and then fly him out? Like, I don't really even know how this works yet.
that's what they have to do, because the City of Toronto guidelines would be different. Like, in some NHL US cities, that's his fifth day. You can test out of isolation on your fourth day after a positive test. But because the City of Toronto and Canadian guidelines are different, it reads like he would have to wait and then just meet them in Vegas or meet them in Arizona or something like that.
So the interesting, I think, hockey component in this one is whether you load up or you try and let Mitch Marner carry his own line.
I would feel like that I would be in for Mitch Marner to carry his own line if he didn't just come back from that weird fluky practice injury. He looked pretty like quiet in their one game back. I wasn't expecting him to come out and light it up, but he may be a little bit more hesitant to go in the corners, maybe just a bit quiet. You know, I've been back from injury. You don't usually come out gunning. Like, you're a little tentative. So now is he given the opportunity to be leaned on really heavily right away? That could also be a little bit of an issue. You want to have longevity. If you look at the Toronto Maple Leafs season, you want to have them able to make a depth run into the playoffs. And are you going to ask too much out of Mitch Marner when he's not 100%? That's the only question I have with the loading up his own line. But it would be a great kind of opportunity to see Mitch Marner show everybody that he has what it takes to do that type of thing.
Yeah, and we don't have a ton of sample on it. So over the last 2 years, regular season only, Marner's only played 67 5-on-5 minutes without at least one of Matthews or Tavares. Those haven't been particularly effective minutes, but we're also talking a defensive heavy coverage, and just tiny, tiny samples. So I don't think it would be the worst thing to see that sample grow, but also, like, if you're Sheldon Keefe and you're like, it's two games, we'll just load up one line and roll with it for now. I could see it going either way. I'm most curious about the power play, because we did just see the power play thrive so effectively without Mitch Marner and even without Jason Spezza for a good chunk of that. And I dug up the numbers. So last 3 years,
I love how you're like, even Jason Spezza too, like he's more important than Mitch Marner. Like, it's like one guy makes 700K, the other guy makes,
I mean, we were
bucks.
Talking about before that Spezza on the PP1.
No, I get it. Yeah, no, hey, listen, it's great. It was just the way that it was framed. Sorry I interrupted you.
Yeah, no, that's okay. So in addition to this tiny sample of 5-on-5, Marner without one of Matthews or Tavares, last 3 years, Marner's only played 31 power play minutes without Austin Matthews. Basically, the Leafs' power play, despite as good as it seemed, the PP2 has seemed this year, it has dropped off pretty dramatically without Matthews and Marner the last couple seasons, as you'd expect. They drop from 8.8 goals per 60 to 6.5. You'd expect that, though, right? Like, Matthews and Marner, your power play guys. Very, very tiny sample of Marner leading non-Matthews units, but they've been super effective in those 31 minutes. So I'm really curious what that looks like, mostly because I think it tells you something really interesting moving forward. If your PP1 has looked really good without Matthews and it's looked really good without Marner, I think that gives you a lot of flexibility and a little bit extra versatility with with how you deploy your power play units moving forward, which was a limiting factor last year.
Yeah, this is where I feel like all of a sudden I'm a huge nerd, because I look at it and go, what can I really learn over two games, right? If it's two games without Matthews, what can I really learn about that power play without him? But I do think it's going to be interesting to watch, especially considering if you are a believer that at times one of the issues with Marner is that it was too predictable and too formulaic. The biggest part of that formula, the biggest part of why it was predictable, was him trying to find Austin Matthews. And without his presence on the ice, maybe that does shift something a little bit for Mitch.
And I'll tell you something, old sample size Bunkus over there. You get a lot, you learn a lot more in two games than you learn in zero games, right? So yeah. It's at least, and I think that, look, this is not something where we're going to be like, oh, they scored two power play goals against the struggling Oilers team, like, break them up. It's more like, how does it look? How does it change tactically? Like, this is something I'd love to talk to Bourne about next Monday when he's back on the show, is like, what has gone into, assuming this goes well, what has gone into that tactically and how these guys are deploying? Because obviously you're changing how that looks structurally if Marner's out, if Matthews is out. So that's kind of the thing I'm watching, and I want to pick at it with Bourne, just because, again, the power play is something that on paper this group should be elite. They've been elite this year, but in years past, when you get to the playoffs, it's been a bit of a question mark. So
back to loading it up. To me, that's the one that doesn't need as much of a sample because it's more of an indicator of what they would do if they lost Matthews in the postseason. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I think that you do put Mitch with the top guns, that you don't try to get cute with it. If they do it in these regular season games, I don't mind, but I really don't see a scenario in the postseason where if they were to lose Matthews, because I do still look at everything through that lens of what can this teach you about your postseason team. Mitch Marner, to me, is not really supposed to be the guy that carries a line. Do I think they could be effective? Absolutely, I do. But who is he setting up? Who's playing center? You're pushing Kerfoot into that spot now? You're obviously not moving Kampf up the lineup. You're not asking Spezza to play that many minutes. It's who plays there. Who fills in that role? You don't really have someone. So I would think that if you're Sheldon Keefe and you ever get put in that spot, given his track record, you're more likely to actually put Marner with Tavares and put Nylander on a separate line and ask Nylander to be the guy that decides to float out of some the other space and go, this is now going to be the winger that comes off this line. Obviously, moving pieces around, getting looks with those different players, getting looks with those different pieces will probably be something that the coaching staff does. But I'm not going to really criticize Mitch for not being able to quote-unquote carry a line. If he can do it, great. But that's not really what I'm expecting of him, which is why the contract is so frustrating, because you would expect that that is a bona fide player that does carry a line. I just don't know. I think it could end up having positive possession metrics, all those different things. Some nerd would tell me, hey, look, Mitch was great. This line was great. I don't think that it'll be threatening with just Mitch Marner leading the way with the other pieces that this roster has. Even if they decided to go with, hey, we're going to bump up Kasha, we're going to try to figure this out in a different... I don't see it. I don't see how those pieces fit, how those pieces work. And maybe that's why come deadline time, if there is something that this team is going to try to add, it is, again, someone with the versatility to play center in a pinch. Somebody who can jump into your top six if one of those two things happens. Because this team is so dependent on those two top guys.
The only thing I can say about the shuffling of lines is sometimes you look back, like let's say in worst case scenario, somebody's injured going into playoffs or somebody has COVID or someone's out of the roster. These type of tiny displays or these chemistry building games sometimes is something that a coach can look back on. Hey, you know, there's a three game stretch where we had to shuffle things up and Kerfoot looked really good up there, or you know, Spezza actually can hold his own. Like, I know that seems, okay, a little bit ridiculous. But there's a little bit of a positivity that I can say as a former player that you never really know if you have the same players in the same positions and you rely on that chemistry. Now, if they don't have Matthews for a few games, there might be something to say about Marner showing that he can drive that line, and maybe that's something you bank in the back, or let's say you're down two in a series and you need to shuffle the lines for a little bit of chemistry. That's the only thing I can say is maybe Keefe tries something, he sees that there's a little bit of fire there and comes back to it in a situation down the road. But yeah, I mean, obviously it would be great to have Matthews in the lineup and playing, especially if he gets to go back to Arizona and see family and stuff.
I want my elite setup man with someone who is a prolific goal scorer. And so that means that if Matthews is out, Marner goes with Tavares. And I'm saying Kerfoot is the second line with Nylander. And then give them maybe Akasha up the lineup and ask Bunting to play next to Tavares and Marner. That this is the way that I'm deploying things. Or trying to pick from one of the other spots on the roster. I just don't think it's a good use of resources, a good style to say, hey, Mitch, you're going to play with Alex Kerfoot. You're going to go put the puck on Alex Kerfoot's stick. I just, if I'm opposing defenses, I'm just begging Mitch Marner to shoot at all times, anytime that they enter the zone. He's got to be with somebody that can finish. He's got to be with somebody with a shot. And I don't see that as Alex Kerfoot, as good as his season has been. I can't believe I didn't talk about Ben here. We got to talk about Ben some more. Maybe we'll do it in the text line. Maybe we'll start 7 o'clock hour. Remember, it's text line Tuesday. So text 590-590. You can reach us on our socials. At JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar. Oh, you forgot the bit already, Blake. It's Blake Murphy ODC and E. Blake Murphy. We tried to do that yesterday. It's okay.
I know. I was already getting ready for Chew On. My bad.
Hit me up as always in the DMs on Instagram. I always read them. And follow this, by the way. follow our podcast on Spotify. Subscribe on iTunes. Spotify now allows you to leave reviews. So if you listen to this sucker, leave a 5-star review. It really does help us out either on iTunes or on Spotify. And if you don't feel that way, just leave it alone. Don't be a jerk. Let's take a break. Let's come back and let's do the A-list. JD Bug, Sailor Sportfire, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's the Fan Morning Show. It's the lockdown. Sorry, but I had to play that song. We'll get through it. It's a little bit of a fun, positive song, is it not?
Nope.
No, it's a little Kanye for your, or a little yay for your morning.
I feel like this is something JD and I will disagree on, and Ailish, you won't care as much, but I think 808s and Heartbreak is like criminally underrated.
I agree.
In terms of quality and.
What do you mean I won't have a take on that?
I don't know. I just didn't think you'd have a strong opinion on it. I think influence wise on like the kind of emo rap subgenre that was to come, it had a big influence and it's just very good in general. JD, you are muted.
Oh, JD's muted.
No, it's obviously my by far least favorite Kanye
album. Of course it
album. Is. Well, I mean, I don't know how even what the case would be for any of the albums to be worse than that one. But I love Kanye, so I don't think that it's like a bad album.
Here's the case. Maybe Ye. I like that one. I like that one a lot.
No, but I'm saying Ye and that one are the two that I think you could debate between in terms of, hey, which ones are kind of down the totem pole. But still, it's Kanye, right? So I take it and I think that it's good. That's my thing. I love Kanye. I love Kanye's music. And if he makes it, I can't help myself. It doesn't matter how douchey he gets, how wild he gets. I still am there going, God, this is so good. This is such good music. But yeah, the emo rap stuff doesn't really do it for me. Although Juice WRLD I do like.
Yeah. Well, guess what? You trace that back. I mean, it's not just Kanye. There's some Kid Cudi in there too.
Yeah, but I hate Kid Cudi. Kid Cudi is just awful to me. But Blake, my favorite thing that you do is the tee up is where you go, well, hey, guess what? And it's you. That's your like pulling the fist back, ready to just punch me with a take. That's the move of that is, well, guess what?
You want to
go? Oh no! Yeah, here comes the pain. Here comes the pain.
Ask me to do your homework. Here it comes.
Yeah. Okay, Columbia comes. House right, Party.
Yeah.
What do we got?
Right. Welcome to the A-List.
Which I was never on.
Now, it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Let's start with a little wrestling brain. Ooh, Blake's eyes just perked up on the Zoom. He's like, you got my attention. So, the Rochester Americans have a Savage of the Game Award. Just like, you know, the 3 stars or the game ball, yet it is the Savage of the Game. And so I know you won't be able to see this, but just imagine, close your eyes unless you're driving. Don't close your eyes. They have a Macho Man Randy Savage costume when you score the game-winning goal. And it is just like full electric factory, the hat, the outfit with the tassels, the glasses. It's just it's a whole experience. And they must be wrestling fans, or somebody must have come up with this incredible tradition. Savage of the Game. I thought Blake would like that. You can go to the Rochester Americans Twitter page if you'd like to see some of the enactments of Randy Savage. But like, where does Randy Savage fall in your power rankings?
Oh, he's way up there. Like in terms of in-ring and character work, like pretty ahead of his time. You go back to that era and it's like, it's funny. Like Hulk Hogan was always at the top of the card, him and Ultimate Warrior. And then it's like, oh yeah, Macho Man always had the best match on the card. So he was at the top for good stretches as well. But he was always kind of like the worker of the top guys, whereas Hogan and Ultimate Warrior and Andre the Giant were like, oh, punch you, body slam, finishing move. Macho Man's working like the 20-minute technical matches. One of the first guys to fly off the top rope regularly.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I don't know where he lands in terms of my favorite wrestlers because I never watched him as an actual wrestler. But I will say that he is easily number one when it comes to wrestlers that you imitate. Ooh, yeah, brother. Ooh, like, it's Miss Elizabeth. I don't even know what Miss Elizabeth looks like. And yet I know everything about the way that guy spoke. So, yes, that's what's iconic to me is the impression, is that you could do that impression to a non-wrestling fan and that they know exactly who you're doing. Except for Ailish, because I feel like we tried to teach Ailish the Macho Man voice one time. And
you
she
did, a couple months
flight.
Back.
Yeah, do you want to give us your new and improved version of the Macho Man impression?
Wait, ooh, I'm nervous.
Brother.
Okay. Ooh, brother.
No, not quite
that
growly.
That was so good. Ooh, brother.
You gotta do it again.
Ooh, brother.
Yeah, Vic, you gotta get that drop now. Thank you. That's a great drop.
Every time we talk about my brother Jordan, we can play that.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, brother.
Snap into a great Canadian meats.
Ooh, oh, yeah. Actually, there you go. Yeah. I like that.
That's not the brand he did that for, but...
No, I know. I was going to say, I don't know how that felt bad.
Well, it doesn't roll off the tongue, but I know where.
No,
I know who's
that didn't
paying
feel
the bills.
Right. I was going to say, though, Blake, do you prefer doing Macho Man or JR? Because I think JR is the only challenger to the wrestling impression throne. My God! He killed him!
So, I prefer Macho Man and... But that's primarily because I think I have a better Macho Man than a JR.
Okay.
Let's hear it.
What did you think of my JR?
Let's hear it.
Not bad. I think the Southern
What's he doing here?
Yeah, I think the Southern accent you're putting on it is maybe more of the Andy Bernard molasses. Whereas JR is like a pure Sooner. Like, I don't know. It's a thin line between an Oklahoma accent
you
and
have
a Mississippi accent, but... My JR? I don't have a good JR.
Come on. We're the judges.
Well, you can do it. You can do it now, Ailish. Now that's better. Yeah. This is a thing I actually prefer is you doing it now. So it's like, yeah, this is what you got
to
try to
mimic.
You
need to go
one
more time so I can replicate it.
My God. He killed him. What's he doing here?
Okay. Well, now the last one was just a South Park accent by the end of that one.
My God, they killed him.
My God.
He is broken in half.
It's hard. I can't get
that. He broke him in half. Yeah.
I don't have that, little growl.
That's got to be Kane.
I think Ailish does impressions is now a bit on the show.
She also doesn't have the like JR and Macho Man experience Alina. So she's doing an impression of us doing an impression.
I'll go watch
later. Yeah, but mine are flawless. I want to hear from people in the text line what they actually think about
So somebody just texted in. What did that, why did that oh brother sound more like Milhouse than Macho Man? Okay, we're trying. All right, next
brother.
No, that's what it sounded like.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Yes, it sure did.
Ooh, brother, my glasses. Hulk Hogan punched me in my glasses.
At all. I thought it was getting really like in my throat too.
You were not.
Ooh, yeah.
No.
All right, well, next. Moving on. This is just a little interesting tidbit that we could maybe open up the text line for after I give you the deets. But during TNT's broadcast of the Winter Classic, which was between the Blues and the Wild, Gary Bettman was on, our favorite commissioner of the world. And he once again tried to float the idea of having hockey added to the Summer Olympics. Now, he's apparently been trying to have this happen since the mid-1900s. 1990s, whoops. that's not at all close. But the IOC doesn't want to move it. Apparently, hockey actually made its Olympic debut in the 1920 Summer Games. before they switched over to the Winter Olympics in 1924, obviously would make a lot more logistical sense if it was a summer Olympic sport because it wouldn't interfere with the league's 82 games. But yeah, I just wanted to see what you guys thought about that, what the text line thought about it. Would you want to watch the summer Olympic hockey if that meant that there was no NHLers having to miss their games? Would that be the solution? Is it something that's feasible? No. Okay.
This is one of the dumbest ideas I've ever heard. I'm sorry. I don't care, Gary, if it happened in 1920, okay? Lots of things happened in 1920 that I don't think we're going to be ever doing again. One of the things that makes hockey so special as a part of the Winter Olympics is that it is the closing event. It is the highlight of the Winter Olympics for most people. Not for everyone, but for most people in this country anyways, most people that are hockey fans, you watch the Winter Olympics going, sorry, what's this sport? What's this one? Okay, I've never tried that before. Yeah, I've never done a luge. No, nor will I ever. Okay, no, I've never done this. Cross-country skiing? Okay, yeah. All right, let's just get through some of these events. Let's get to the hockey. It's the crown jewel of the Winter Olympics. It's where hockey takes center stage. It's the reason why people care about it is because it's not up against basketball. It's not up against the 100-meter dash. It's not up against soccer. Like, this, it would get buried. It would feel completely out of place. Like, it's a sport that's played on ice. Trying to equate it to the Summer Olympics and have the... What would the ice quality be like in some of the countries that they play the Summer Olympics in? Horrible? The worst?
Oh, they wouldn't play it outdoors.
Of course they're not playing it outdoors, but either way, there's...
They can make a rink anywhere in the world.
They can make a rink anywhere in the world? They can't even have good ice in Florida during these during the Stanley Cup.
That's 'cause
like,
Florida sucks.
No. Making good ice is hard, and having – this is one of the only problems with the Stanley Cup Finals. You usually get to a place where you're playing in some of these climates and some of these places where ice does get crappy, and you also have a bunch of guys that are end up being beat up. So I hate this idea. I think it's horrific. It's an awful, awful, awful idea. It just shows you how greedy the NHL is with this, that they can never figure it out, that – having best-on-best tournaments means something to the game, even if it means an inconvenience to them. But yeah, no, it's a bad idea, and Gary should feel bad for having it.
Okay, yeah. Text in your thoughts.
How thankful is Gary Bettman that Rob Manfred exists? Because every time Bettman says something dumb, it feels like Manfred says or dumb so, oh, does yeah. something even
like, hold my beer.
Yeah.
Okay,
just
one
Goodell
last quick
now,
one here.
Where Goodell just doesn't say really anything ever at all. True. Again, because he's yeah. just... He realized knows. A long time ago that every time he opens his mouth, everyone just goes, excuse me, what?
Also, so just... Goodell also has, like, the... not plausible deniability, but, like, he has the cushion of, like, everyone knows what this is with the NFL. Like, every NFL yeah. fan wants their football on Sunday. Every NFL mm-hmm. owner is going to pay Goodell millions and millions of dollars forever as long as the cash keeps moving.
Yep.
He's got the... Mm-hmm. He doesn't have the easiest commissioner job in terms of difficulty of the job, but in terms of, like, knowing you can just focus on the money and not worrying about anything else.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
Okay, last one for the A-list. Another positive, because I want to end on a positive. So there's a Tennessee Titans super fan, Chad Davis. He's a season ticket holder. He was at the game on the weekend and was on his way home and realized he lost his wedding ring. Now, it's not just any normal wedding ring. It has very sentimental value additionally to being married to his wife. It is actually a Titans ring that his wife got for him because he has bled for the Titans his whole life. He has the logo tattooed on his arm. 2 years ago, his wife gave him season tickets, and then that's the same year they got married, and the ring itself is blue with the Titans logo. He's like married to the Titans and his wife. Okay, so just mm-hmm. picture his feeling when he had lost it. So he apparently has a strong following of Twitter fans that are Titans fans. And so he posted about it saying, I lost my wedding band somewhere at the game from the, and he posted a photo of it. And the Titans start scavenging the arena with a slight dusting of snow. So imagine how difficult it is to find a wedding ring in the snow. But yet it was found, section 202, row U, seats 3 and 4. Found the ring. He's returned with his wedding ring. And it's a beautiful story about love and the Tennessee Titans and prosperity and discovery.
No, this is a horrible. This is boring. Like, this was, you went way too long for a story that was, I have a Titan super fan lost his Titan super fan ring and the team discovered it. Like,
no, but like it blew up. You're trying to draw it out into something.
And it was blue and the section and the this and the everyone banded together.
You know what, JD? One of your New Year's resolutions was to be better about the A-list.
And guess what?
Second of all, I'm struggling to find good A-list content because the world is.
I don't have a problem. No,
shambles. So this is a lovely story, and I'm very happy for Chad and his wife that he found his beautiful Titans wedding ring, and that's all I want to hear, okay?
A guy named Chad has the Titans tattoo and has a Titans wedding ring. Got it. That's what I have now taken away from the story.
Two quick things. Chad, great beard. Second, season tickets as a Valentine's Day gift before you're even married. Wow. That is a...
No wonder he married her.
Yeah. Guns blazing.
She got a Titans super fan ring to get this guy down. Yeah. I just, the only thing that sucks for Chad is that he's a Tennessee Titans fan. Although Titans sneaky could get Derrick Henry back.
Look
playoffs.
At that division. I'll say this. Valentine's Day is in like 6 weeks. If you are trying to win my heart, do not under any circumstances get me anything related to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah. Okay.
Ailish, is that it for the A-list today?
That's it.
Are we going to put JD on timeout for the A-list tomorrow so he doesn't break his New Year's resolution on January 5th?
I'm
no, but that makes me
guys.
Relatable. That
it's
makes me relatable.
It's difficult to find good stories, okay?
Breaking your New Year's resolutions on January 4th is as tradition as strong as baking them on January 1st.
Hey, you made it one show. Anyway, let's take a break. After the break, we're going to be into the text line. So shoot us a text, 590-590. Anything you want to talk about, any of our previous conversations. You want to talk about Big Ben? You want to talk about the NFL that was this week? Let us know.